is no guarantee. What will you do then? At the age of 15 or 16 or 17, and there's a baby who's going to be yours. Guys and girls both, think about it. You'll be bringing pleasure to Satan. Satan, who wants to hurt you and who hates you, he's going to be rejoicing when you make that mistake. Just give thought to the consequences. We are just running out of time. I was asked to talk about how we dress. I'm just going to do this as quickly as I can. It's a subject that I think we could do well to give a lot of time to, but we just can't do that this morning. In Genesis chapter 2, we are introduced to Adam and Eve. They were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. That's an amazing thing. Two adult people were out here in the wide open world without any clothing on, and they weren't ashamed. That's a perfect world without sin. But of course, as you know, that she took of the fruit that God had commanded Adam not to eat of. She took of its fruit and ate. She gave to her husband with her, and he ate. And at the moment after they ate, they became aware. They knew they were naked, it says, and they were ashamed of it. That's an interesting thing. What was it that brought their awareness of shame? What brought the awareness of shame? What was it? Yeah, that's true. But how did they get that knowledge? They ate of the fruit. And when they ate of the fruit, what was it they were actually doing? I'm not asking these questions very well. It was sin. Sin and shame are directly linked. An awareness of sin, a knowledge of sin, makes us aware of the shame. We have little children, and they walk around without any clothes on at all, and is there any shame at all? No, isn't that interesting? They have no shame, and I think it may be in part due, they have no awareness of sin. God has not imputed their sin to them, and so they walk around in nudity and impurity, like Adam and Eve did once very long ago. But eventually something starts to happen. I remember the changing point when suddenly it wasn't okay for mom to walk into my bedroom when I was dressing. Something began to change. And there was an awareness developing in me. And I think these two may go hand in hand. And that's an interesting thing to think about. Shame of nakedness is a good thing because it's connected to our realization of sin. If we deny the shame of nakedness, we deny the reality of sin. Nonetheless, once they realized they were naked, they saw their shame, what did they do? They went and sewed themselves aprons or coverings of fig leaves. Naturally, they knew, once the knowledge of good and evil was there, that they should be covered. God came along in Genesis 3:21, and it says, He made for Adam and his wife tunics or coats of skin and clothed them. There's a lot I'd like to look at, but I guess we're just going to take a moment to look at the details of what actually constitutes nakedness. I think there's a lot more in this subject of modesty than just what constitutes nakedness, but in the time we have, that's what we'll look at. They made for themselves aprons. The Hebrew word there means belt or girdle. In other words, they knew that the genitals should be covered. And they covered them. But brethren, and I know many of you have heard this 100 times over. You've been hearing it since you were a little kid. To me, this was kind of revolutionary when I started studying it several years ago. Or when I first heard it. They covered the genitals. The Lord comes along, and what does He do? He makes them these coats. Now stop for a moment and consider. Number one, this is the very first correction that God ever made concerning humanity. The very first correction He ever made was to put more clothes on. And secondly, in order to do it, what did He have to do? Every indication is He killed an animal. Some have pointed out this would be the first animal sacrifice. And I think that's a good point. But a world that had never seen death. There was no death, perfection. God had made this life, and that life probably wasn't very old. He killed to cover them. In other words, then, although God does not see as man sees and looks at the heart, it's true also that God cares about clothes. And he cares about making sure that more than just what nature would tell us is clothed. The word that's translated in Genesis 3:21 as coat or tunic means a garment, a robe, generally with sleeves and coming down to the knees. Every source I have ever consulted, and there are lots of Hebrew sources out there, not written by members of the church, written by people who have no vested interest in Church of Christ doctrine. The word means a garment which covers from the neck to the knee. And when we look at how the high priest was dressed in Exodus chapter 28, verse 42, even under his robe, he wore breeches. Breeches which went from the waist to the thighs, understood by most commentators to mean from the waist to the knee, or thereabout. In other words, then, to uncover the chest, as boys so often do when they go swimming, to uncover the midsection, as many girls are doing more and more, to uncover the thigh, as is par for the course in most circles. We tread a line if we haven't crossed it. In some of those cases, we've definitely crossed it. We're showing our nakedness. Now, this has a lot of ramifications, I think, not the least of which is one of our favorite pastimes in our culture, something I enjoy. It's swimming. Brethren have in the past made a big issue of mixed swimming. I personally do not see the issue as the mixed question. It's how they're dressed. If girls and boys are dressed modestly, men and women are dressed modestly, I don't know that it's really an issue that they're together. I think what's happened in the past is maybe we thought, well, you have to dress immodestly to be swimming, so we better make sure the boys are over here and the girls are over here. The problem with that is the Bible doesn't even teach us it's okay for a guy to be immodest around a guy. There's a covering that needs to take place. Study it for yourself. If you have any questions, please feel free to come and talk to me about it. I might just throw out a couple of things here. When miniskirts were introduced into Tokyo, Japan, the assault rate jumped 80% in 6 months. In 1967, when the Santa Maria was hijacked, the women on board were concerned that the rebels might have designs on them, so they left off wearing the enticing clothing. They stopped appearing in shorts and halter tops. They quit swimming in the ship's pool. They knew what that clothing could lead to. Men are not excused for their sinful response to immodest clothing, but neither are sisters nor brothers, for that matter, excused for dressing in an immodest way. Let your clothing reveal the Christian character you claim to have. Make the two harmonious. I'm going to take just a few minutes to address this final subject, and it concerns how much involvement we should permit our children, our teenagers, I think primarily, how much involvement we should permit them to have in Christian and other social activities. I am personally very interested in this subject because I'm in the middle of rearing my children, and we're getting closer to those years every day. I don't know if you've ever thought of it in this way, but I would encourage us to at least give some thought to this approach. In Proverbs 23:26, Solomon said, "My son, give me your heart." Over and over throughout Proverbs, Solomon keeps saying, "My son, my son, my son," pleading with him, "Listen." And finally he says, "Give me your heart. Give me your allegiance. Give me your affection. Give me your heart." I think, and I'm no expert, based on what I see and observe and what I read in the Bible, brethren, I think this may be at the heart of every decision we make with respect to our children. We want to keep their hearts turned towards us. And why? Because hopefully we are Christians and we have legitimate guidance for them. Godly parents in conjunction with children whose hearts are turned towards them, that's the perfect combination, and that's the combination we're looking for. What does that have to do with how much involvement our children have in other activities? I think it has everything to do with it. Maybe the average American family has a day something like this. We get up in the morning, it's time to go to school. The kids are sitting down for breakfast, they're sat in front of the TV, or they watch TV while they eat breakfast. Mom or dad is busy getting ready for work. Once we get everyone fed and dressed, we hop in the car, maybe we rush them to school, or we put them at the bus stop. They go to school, you go to work. They spend 8 hours or more at school. Once school's over, maybe they have an extracurricular activity, but they stay at school a little bit longer, or they go to daycare, or you go and pick them up, you take them home, you grab a quick bite to eat, and then you take them to kung fu practice, or soccer practice, or volleyball practice, or whatever it is. And you sit there in the car and you read, or you sit there on the bleachers and you're doing some of your work, or you're just watching while they're out there playing with the kids and all that. Then it comes time to go home. They've got homework to do. They're engaged in that homework. They're playing with the iPod. They're watching television. They're listening to the radio. And then they get it all done, and the day is over, and they go to bed, and it's time to start all over again in the morning. Tell me, how will you, as a parent, if your day is anything like that, how will you ever keep the heart of your children? If you do it, I'm glad. But I would submit to you that in the course of a day like that, and day after day, and day after day like that, just from the sheer time factor, the teachers at school, the students at school, the kids on the team, the radio and TV personalities, the musicians, they all had more opportunity to win the heart and the allegiance and the respect of your children than you did. And in our culture, I believe that is largely what happens. Because the family isn't spending much time together, because they're living in parallel lives in the same space where they're doing different work, different entertainment, different groups of people they spend time with, very little bond is built between mom and dad. And then on top of that, we bring in what we deem as a very good thing. And there are some good things about it. But we bring in what we might call this youth group mentality. I believe young people need to spend time together. I never would have found a wife if I had not spent time with young people. But I do think, brethren, it's questionable just how much of this is actually appropriate and needful and wise. When I look at some of the things that this youth group mentality, and I realize that most of our congregations, maybe none of theirs, are actually a so-called youth group, but we do tend to encourage this sort of thing, where we want to make sure that teenagers particularly are able to spend lots of time with their other peers, and frankly, without us around. And I think there are some dangers, at the very least, that come with that. Firstly, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. And though these children of ours are not children in the fullest sense, neither are they adults. Many of them have not yet made a commitment to Christ, and so that's still in flux, and their behavior is as well. Some of them were not raised in homes as stable as yours might be, and they're present. What we have at times are children who are not yet fully developed, who have not entirely lost that foolishness of childhood, inexperienced and young, and we put them together, and then maybe they go off and spend hours each night with 20 bucks in their pocket to go do whatever, and they come home at midnight or 1 o'clock, or maybe 10:30. We don't know a whole lot of what they did, and the reality is you will never know all that they did. I know you know that. You'll never know all that they did. And a lot of things go down that shouldn't, largely because there was no loving word of caution and supervision by a parent. In much of this, there's an entertainment mentality. We don't get together with our peers to go work, to go help a widow, to go do something productive necessarily. We go so we can go to the movies, so we can go out to eat, so we can go play video games, so we can go do this, that, or the other. It's all about entertainment. That's what it's built around. I think we need to question how wise that is. I think this also encourages our young people to believe that they can't really have a good time. And I hope young people don't think I'm attacking them, because I'm not. I'm speaking about something I myself experienced. But what it does is it encourages young to believe, and our culture is very guilty of this, that young people, you can't really have a good time. The best time is only had when you're with people your own age. Now let me ask you, is that a wise attitude for us to encourage? I think of classes, for example. Now, I'm not saying that classes are wrong, but we'll have classes, and I can think of times as a kid when we'd be in our class and maybe one of the elders would come and sit in to make, you know, just to see what's going on. How would most children react if when they were going to have their teen Bible study or their class over here, how would they feel if a parent or two were just incorporated into that study? I think in a lot of cases, they think, well, that's not what I want. Now, we've gotten to the point where we think, well, that's okay. Is that okay? God's given us this family, this unit, in which children are to be reared and shaped and taught. Mom and dad are the ones who are to have their heart. But we have a culture that says your heart should go to your peers. They're going to be the ones whose opinion you care about, whose advice you seek. And I think in part it's encouraged simply because we give them all this time with one another without our presence. Well, what are you saying, John? We're just supposed to have our house, turn our house into a monastery? And just keep all the children in there and don't let them do anything with each other? By no means. Mom and Dad, maybe what you can do is instead of sending your children off to spend time and be in a situation where you can't see what's going on, you be the hosts. And don't be those boring, typical parent hosts necessarily. Don't be the host that says, okay, you're all here at our house, I'm going to cook the hamburgers, there you go, now Mom and I are going to go into the bedroom or we're going to go downstairs and you guys have the fun. No. Instead, Dad, why don't you be the one to set up the grill in the backyard, set up the volleyball net. Mom, you go out there and lay out the chips and salsa and the watermelon, set up the lawn chairs, go out and play volleyball with them. Be the one they laugh at. Be a part of it. Be there. You know what? There are some teenagers who may come to your outing who don't like the fact that you're there. Why don't they? Maybe they would behave differently if you weren't there. Maybe it's good you're there. There may be some who, because you're there, they don't want it, they don't come at all. That may be just as well. I'm not saying build a cage around your children, but at the same time, be involved. Have family events. Instead of encouraging children to only think they can have fun with each other and that they need each other so much, encourage an environment where they need you. Maybe get a few families in the church to say, okay, hey, 2 months from now, we're all going to come over to our house on Saturday. You can spend the night till Sunday, or come over on Friday and spend the night till Saturday. And what we're going to do is 6 families, where each family is going to be responsible for memorizing a chapter of Ephesians. Amber and I have talked about doing this. And then after the families work on this together, maybe in our family, Amber memorizes 5 verses, I 5, Bethany, Peter, and Zion, 5 verses apiece. And then we all come together on that Saturday morning after we've had a breakfast together. We quote the whole book of Ephesians together. We talk about what we read. And all the while, it's Mom and Dad and the children together. The children enjoy each other's company in the presence of Mom and Dad. The children enjoy the parents' company. And we have generations mixing. We have real unity in Christ. Work together in a house project. Don't have one, invent one. I have a brother who wanted to teach his sons to work, and he had a lot of bonding with them in this. He went and bought an old Mustang, and they revamped that thing. Amazing. They learned along the way. Moms and daughters, dads and sons, learn a skill together. Down in the Blue Springs area where I live, they have Missouri Town 1855. They brought in all these old buildings around that time in the 2 previous centuries. And they have a blacksmith there where they do it the old way with, I don't even know what they're called now. What are those big things? Billows, the big billows and all that. What is it? origin of it. Okay, thank you, thank you. Well, that shows you how much I know about it. But I want to know something about it. And you can go there and learn that. I thought when Peter gets a little bit older, if he's interested at all, we'll just go and see if we can learn how to do it. And Amber has taken time to do things with the girls. There's bonding. And you know what? And I think this is a very significant point too. We talk about how children and teens are lacking self-esteem and lacking direction. How much self-esteem and direction would you have if you were left all your time to play video games and hang around with other kids who aren't going anywhere either? I'm serious. I'm not insulting our teenagers. I'm saying this is an environment we have created and allowed to go. If the end of life, if the be-all, end-all of each week is to get so you can just go hang out and be entertained all night and then live through the next week so you can do it again, what is there? But what if instead, moms and dads, you spend all Friday night baking cookies and whatever with the family together, and then the next day you go as a family and you visit the widows with those things? Or what if you choose to do something productive? Go help a widow in the congregation. Go do something at the church building together. Maybe you can get the teens together and go do it. But when it's all said and done, there's been bonding with parents. And furthermore, there's been something meaningful done, and we feel worth something when we've done something worthwhile. I think we can do a great service to people, to our teenagers. And I'm no expert, but I think we maybe will do a great service by exercising some of these things. One more example. I'll just cite my brother Mark. Many of you know him. I cite him because I saw it. His two oldest sons were teenagers at the same time I was. And I spent a lot of my Fridays and Saturday nights just hanging out. And, you know, there was some good to it, but there was a lot of just wasted time and wasted money. Friday night would come along and Jeremy and Ben wouldn't be allowed to come. Jeremy would say, "We're having family night, family game night." Well, I was a product of the teen culture. I'd make fun of that. Some of us would, family game night. Do you know what? I never heard any resentment out of those two boys about it. And now they are grown men. And I hear them say, you know, Dad said, I was talking to Dad about this. One thing Dad mentioned to me, these boys don't resent their father. These boys respect their father. They go to him for guidance. They listen to what he says. And I'm not saying this just because they're related to me. If any of you know those boys, I think you might see that Mark and Cindy Morris know how to raise good boys. But they didn't take the typical throw them in the mix all the time approach. They chose something different. Something that would allow parents and children to have a close relationship. They had their heart. I'll close there. I'm already over time, and you've been very kind to listen.